You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
What is going on? Thank you for hanging out with us. This is the IT and the D Show. Thank you for clicking play. As you know already, this is episode 222. Craziness.
So we're 206 episodes past where you were.
Stop counting. Guests this week. Segment two, we are very, very lucky to have none other than Ken Daniels here, the voice of the Detroit Red Wings. He's going to be here segment two in studio.
It's crazy.
I know.
He's right next to me. And I'm not nerding out.
You are totally nerding out. And then segment three, we got Steve Sadler here and Terry Bean. They're with IgniteCast. They're kind of revolutionizing how companies capture and retain knowledge and train employees. Kind of a cool story.
It is.
But hey,
Before we get rolling, though, so are you moving your business to Office 365? Working in the cloud can make your life a lot easier, but getting help, it's another story. So that's why you should call AppRiver. They've got the most experienced support team in the business. You get free U.S.-based support from folks who care about helping you and, more importantly, actually know how. If you're going to Office 365, go with AppRiver. Try AppRiver services free for 30 days. That's AppRiver, appriver.com/IT. And as always, guys, hey, thanks for the support.
AppRiver. Dave, you may fire when ready.
You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Following program is intended for mature audiences.
I'm Wyatt, that's Gary, you're Bob, and you're Dave. This is the IT and the D Show.
This is Max Headroom. And what you're about to witness is one of the most sinister-sounding intros to a trailer to one of the greatest epics ever.
This is Billy D. Williams. Bob and Dave and I are enjoying a Colt 45 right now. And remember, IT in the D, it works every time.
Just where do you guys think you are?
The Library of Congress?
Detroit?
Beyond the Sun?
Any of those, right?
Take him to Detroit.
No! No, not Detroit! No! No, please! Anything but that! No!
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Then don't come! Shut up!
Hi, this is Christy Swanson, and you're listening to the IT in the D Show. And Bob and Dave touch my hoo-hoos.
What happens when you tap the angry beaver in the bumhole?
Exactly. Come on.
What the hell with this? I'm calling a break. We'll come back to the show.
This is Guilfoyle from Silicon Valley, and the only two guys I hate more than Dinesh are Bob and Dave. Suck it, guys.
What's up, everybody? This is Billy Zapka. Sweep the leg. Listening to IT and the D Show. No mercy.
I may have to wipe the beak off.
Hi, this is Kelly LeBrock from Weird Science. So, Bob and Dave, what would you little maniacs like to do first?
Are we at a break yet?
Hey, this is Zach McGowan from Planet Earth. You're listening to IT and the D Show.
Hi, I'm Ernie Hudson, and you're listening to IT and the D. All you nerds out there.
Nerds!
What is a nerd?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
Hey, Detroit, this is Anthony and Michael Hall. You're listening to my buddies Bob and Dave on IT in the D.
This is Scott Steiner, Big Papa Pump. The IT in the D Show is your hookup. Holler if you hear me.
You're in your underwear? I'm in my underwear. Hey, let's hang out.
No, I'm sorry, honey. I have a headache.
I definitely want to see Bob in his underwear. That's a fact.
Hey, everybody. This is Tony Todd. What's happening? You may know me from Candyman, The Rock, Sushi Girls, Zoom, Night of the Living Dead. A lot of pop culture media madness. Anyway, you're listening to IT in the D Show business.
I'm totally into Dave, but not right. So much Bob.
This is Robert Hayes, a Ted Stryker to my mother. When I'm not hanging out at the Magumbo Bar, I'm listening to the IT and the D Show. It's worse than Detroit.
Is there such thing as a meat hangover?
I love my Monday meat steak.
Hey, folks, this is WWE Hall of Famer Hacksaw Jim Duggan, and you're listening to the IT and the D Show. Tough guys.
Oh! So, what would you little maniacs like to do first?
The question isn't what are we going to do, the question is what aren't we going to do?
Ludicrous speed! Sir, had you better buckle up? Now buckle this! Ludicrous speed! Go!
We'll be right back. Welcome back. Thank you for listening. You have clicked play on the IT in the D show.
Sorry.
As we're as we're finding out again, often imitated, never duplicated, we've made it all the way to episode 222, hanging out here in Studio One in Podcast Detroit in beautiful Royal Oak, Michigan. This is Bob the Sales Guy, always hanging out with Dave the Geek. Nuri the FNG is in...
he's on a plane somewhere.
He's in Bangalore.
Oh, I thought he was meeting a girl named Allure.
That's what I thought, too. I don't know. Apparently he was in India.
Oh, okay.
But no, did you hear, like, before we got to... He was drank at Arbor Brewing Company... In India.
India.
Like, I had no
idea.
I didn't know that
was a thing.
I didn't either.
Who knew?
It was the real stuff, though. So yeah. He said it was good. Randy, I do the Twitter's Walker, is in studio. Find us online at itinthed.com and like us on all the socials and follow us everywhere. Find podcasts are sold.
And leave us a review for F's sake.
When's the last time we got a review?
I haven't looked in a while. For all I know, we've been flooded and I don't know.
Meatball got a review.
It did.
It said we thought they were drunk every episode.
The hosts are always hammered, which we, well,
I was going to say, aren't you?
That's not wholly inaccurate.
But supposed to be.
How's that different from this show? Wait a second. Right.
We're not hammered. We're pleasantly buzzed.
But hey, we've had a crazy last couple weeks. Last week we were podcasting live from the Integrate Conference, which is Automation Alley's first.
I did four live broadcasts in 5 days.
Yeah. Integrate was a cool show that brought together kind of technology, robotics, automotive, IT, cybersecurity.
Had like a lot of good stuff there.
Yeah, it was one of those ones where, like, what's going on here? But at the end of it, you're like, this all kind of makes sense. And, you know, it's not a niche.
Right.
It was more broad.
Oh, I get it. Yeah.
Exactly. Then we were at Dino's for Jennifer Hammond from Fox 2 did a
– Books for Boxing.
Books for Boxing, yeah. Trying to for the Downtown Youth Boxing Club.
Yeah.
Raised a bunch of money, met a lot of cool people, including one of them that's going to be a guest on segment two, Mr. Ken Daniels. Yeah, exactly. And this week we're going to be, if you check out the Meet tab on itinthed.com, that's M-E-E-T, we'll be at Nancy Whiskey for one of our regular socials. No cover, no speakers, no idiots. Just good old fashioned networking with IT folks.
It's a good thing. And as always, you should plan on taking an Uber from our event, as always. And the damnedest thing happened, and we talked about this a little bit, you and I over the week. I had the weirdest thing happen. So I think it was after, it wasn't after Integrate, it was after one of the events we were at. I left my car here at the studio because, well, drunk. And had taken an Uber home. And so I go to take an Uber back the next morning. And literally 2 minutes after I summon an Uber through the app, I get a phone call from a 313 area code phone number who says that they're Uber support and they need to verify my account before the driver can come pick me up. And I said, oh, really? What does that mean? Like, well, it's a new thing we're rolling out and yada, yada, yada. You know, we should need to, you know, verify the account and the account holder and all that kind of stuff. And I said, well, that's fascinating because I took an Uber home last night and I didn't have that happen. And they said, well, you know, it's just a new thing. And I was like, well, if you're going to be expecting me to give you either A debit card number or B a credit card number over the course of this phone call, I'm just going to go ahead and tell you to go F yourself right now. And they're like, well, you know, we'll have to cancel your account. I'm like, go ahead. And then I'm going to go ahead and look back through our show notes and I'm going to find Mike White, the GM's phone number, and I'm going to call him up and click.
Do you know who I am? But that's, you know what?
Sure enough, my Uber driver showed up and picked me up just fine.
Well, the night before, like, my account got flagged for fraud, so it shut off. So my Uber, like, when I was down at Kobo for YomaCon.
Really?
Uber wouldn't – it said your account didn't go through. And I'm like – I checked my bank. And I'm like, oh, my God, I got enough money for an Uber. It's kind of like when your card gets declined at McDonald's. You're like, just F my life right now.
just tell me now. Yeah.
But it just said that it wouldn't go through. You know, and then the next day it was fine. And it was just the weird fraud thing from the bank. Anyway, nobody called. But, like, it's funny. They're getting – now, my take on that is it's inside job.
Oh, that the Uber driver that I summoned was involved in the process?
Totally.
Yeah, I'm fairly convinced.
That because 2 minutes later...
Just trying to figure out how to broach that with Uber.
Just tell them that.
Hey, by the way, here's the screenshot of the driver and the ride and all that stuff. Here's what went down.
2 minutes later, I got a call. Here's that number.
Yep. Oh, yeah, because I screenshotted the number.
As you should.
Well,
because, like, you know, I'm getting the calls now for the Gmail support, and I'm like, oh, this is great show material, so I just leave them on the phone. Like,
and yet you don't have a voice recording app on your phone.
I don't. I'll get one. No, because at the end, I don't think you want to play that on the show, what I say to them. But I did. I found your Christmas present already. By the way, I know we shouldn't be talking about Christmas presents.
Is it a tin can?
No, No, it's something better. It's a big tin can full of ranch dressing.
Yeah, dude, have we figured out if this is a shtick or not?
No, like, this is a real thing.
Who needs a keg of Hidden Valley ranch dressing?
Oh, there's a lot of people that I could name right now.
Really, a keg?
So it's kind of janky.
It's not a keg. It's those Heineken things.
The keg like, comes
oh,
empty.
Oh, so it's the little baby keg?
It's a 5 liter.
Oh.
Yeah.
It comes
yeah,
empty.
It's a keg, and I'm like, I'm thinking the kegerator.
No, no.
It comes empty, and they ship 16 bottles of ranch dressing with it. You fill it yourself.
Oh, that's disgusting. I want it full.
The keg is coated with the antibacterial lining, so the 16 bottles of ranch dressing will stay good for however long it's in there.
In other words, Thanksgiving.
I was going to say, who needs 16 bottles worth of ranch dressing on tap?
You hear those stories all the time about the women that like bring their own salad dressing on dates. What? Can you imagine she pulls out the keg?
The mini. Oh, my God.
Just
my chicken fingers.
Dude, I bet you there's people, there's families, there's people that would go through that. Even, but I mean, come on. What's the gift that keeps on giving?
The weirdest thing you dip in ranch dressing?
I don't think I want to say that.
Ah, boom.
Your wife doesn't want you to say it.
Bob, have you? We talked about this also. We're going to be launching a new business. In case nobody's heard,
oh my God, yes,
we've done a lot of crazy things, but I think this has a solid impact on the community. I believe because Facebook announced that they're going to do this, and I think that we as technology guys should really get involved.
You know, hold on. No, here's the thing. Like, you know, it NSA spies that like grab all the pictures and the Google photos and Google, they have to siphon through thousands upon thousands to get to the good stuff.
Right.
Did we talk about it when the iPhones like for brassiere?
Yeah.
Like if you
they were flagged as
bra photos.
Yeah,
because
you couldn't go bra shopping.
This one's taking a little level up.
Yeah. So Facebook has announced that in order to help combat the scourge of revenge porn, you can just go ahead and upload your nude photos to them, and then they'll tag them and they'll block them and make sure they don't appear anywhere. So I was telling Bob, I mean, that's a business model I think we can get behind. We can launch, I don't know, Nude Safe, Naked Safe,
right?
You know, whatever, and just send us your nudes,
and
we'll take care, and we will make sure, or at least do our best,
they
to make
never
sure
get posted
that
anywhere.
They don't get posted anywhere else.
Randy's already sent his in, right?
He tried. Unfortunately,
blocked.
Any attachment coming from Randy's email address is automatically flagged and blocked.
Smart.
When this story first leaked, they said it was going to be all machine learning. Like they're going to generate a hash of the image and then use the hash. They're not going to save your actual image. But there's somebody who actually has to look at these images first,
right,
before the computer gets them to save.
Well, because let's be honest, there's going to be somebody out there that's just uploading like thousands of pictures of like, I don't know, monkeys or like apples or just like stuff to mess with the algorithms, because why wouldn't you?
Peeled bananas.
Right.
And the way a hash works, all your ex has to do is put a watermark on the image and it has a completely different hash.
Exactly.
Well, but it's fun though. They don't have to go through all the files anymore.
I wonder if the person who has to look through all these images has to provide their own tissues or if Facebook provides them.
It's like the TSA agent in the South Park episode.
Sir, I'm going to have to check your asshole.
Yeah, exactly. Just bottle it. Yeah.
So speaking of Christmas and speaking of boardroom conversations, two of them I want to be involved in. One is the boardroom member from Hidden Valley Ranch that said, we need kegs for ranch dressing. The other one was from Tiffany & Co. that they basically have
and they just scored such a win this week because they're actually launching like a place where you can have breakfast at Tiffany's.
That should have been 20 years ago.
It should have been.
But this is from the Everyday Objects collection. And you can have an empty soup can for the low price.
Tin can. Let me guess. It's Tiffany's. So I'm going to go. Is it $100?
No, let's keep going.
Is it $400?
No, keep going.
I'm going to go with $1,000, Bob.
For the ding, 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 we have a winner. For the low, low price of $1,000, you can have an empty soup can from Tiffany & Co.
But it has the Tiffany blue accent on it.
That's amazing.
So wait, it's not the whole can, it's just the accent?
Yeah, just a stripe down the side is Tiffany blue.
So I get myself a can of Campbell's Chunky Soup, and I empty it out, and I take the label off, and I rinse it.
Yep.
And then I grab some blue nail polish.
Yep.
And then eBay.
Yep.
That's what I'm
hey,
hearing.
Babe.
And if you coat the inside with antibacterial, you'd be ready to put a bunch of ranch in it.
Right.
Oh.
Hey, babe. Babe, I know you wanted that iPhone X for Christmas, but I know you how much you love Tiffany's, and here, I got you something from Tiffany's.
Right. It's an like, empty soup can. Dude, you'd be divorced in like 5 minutes.
And for $1,000, they don't even include the engraving. You have to pay an extra $45 for hand.
Oh, come on, Tiffany's.
Of course they don't.
That's a bunch of garbage.
Four words to ruin Christmas, Tiffany's empty tin can.
Yes. But you know, you mentioned iPhone. They have apparently released a patch for the fact that you could not type the letter I on an iPhone.
The lowercase I you was couldn't, non-existent.
You couldn't type an I on the iPhone.
No, but apparently there was a quick fix before the patch, which was you had to go to settings.
Yeah, you had to add
keyboard replacement.
Yeah.
And they figured you don't need a plus sign, so let's replace the plus and
right.
There.
What? No, they said replace the lowercase I, and I have an autocorrect to a capital I in the settings.
But it's – yeah.
Still.
Add the lowercase I. That was pre-patch. Yeah.
Genius.
I was starting to feel left out about this because it didn't affect my phone, and I was starting to feel bummed out there at the end. Like everybody else was typing this
there was a,
character, and I wasn't.
Wasn't Michelle Gilbert was here last week from Comcast, and she was going – I can't type. I forget what character it was. It was like a comma. Or no, you could see it in like if it shift. Like it was a faint. Was it a comma or a period? And she goes, I can't get to it. Look, I hit this button. It's not there. I hit this button. Not there. She had to go through like the third level of symbols to get like a freaking common punctuation.
Yeah. No, true. All right. So we talked about this one last week, and God bless this guy. The guy who discovered or at least made or figured out and started tweeting about that Kentucky Fried Chicken's Twitter account only follows the five Spice Girls and six guys named Herb.
See, I thought that was like a thing. I didn't know there was like one guy found that
apparently,
out.
The guy that they traced back the tweets, and he's the one that posted about it first. They sent him something magnificent, and this is amazing. They sent him an oil painting of him riding behind Colonel Sanders on a magnificent stallion through the countryside.
It reminds me of the Kenny Powers K-Swiss commercials.
Absolutely.
When it's like Kenny Powers on Napoleon's horse with the sword up. And it's like, here you got like the old school
it's amazing.
Colonel Sanders.
Oh, yeah, it's the old school. Yeah, it's none of this new Colonel Sanders crap.
And he's riding, he's like a piggyback ride.
Yeah.
One hand he has a drumstick and the other hand he's like pointing to go over yonder.
Uh-huh. Oh, it's amazing.
That would be above my couch so fast.
Oh, my God. Well, yeah, and he said he like, you know, he said the doorbell rang and he goes over to answer it. And, you know, because he saw somebody. He's like, well, I'm not expecting a package. And, you know, he opened it up and he was like, holy shit. Like that it is. I mean, it is. And it's beautiful.
Well, it was this commissioned by Whedon and Kennedy, who was the same agency that did the like the funny old Spice ads.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
And they. Like do you want to be on the front page of Reddit? That's how you get to be on the front page of Reddit KFC. Seriously,
right.
You're doing it right.
Oh, and also speaking of iPhone, I found this interesting. So you know, Samsung, you know the Galaxy, and all the other you know Android phones, is poised to make more money off of iPhone sales than they are their own phones. Samsung gets. I want to make sure I get this right. $110. Oh, is it $110? Yeah, $110.
See, I thought they lost money on hardware when they make their own.
They get $110 for every iPhone that's
sold.
Is that
sold. From the lawsuit or what's that from?
Yeah, it's all the patent stuff and all the stuff that Apple has to license from them
them
because they're the one that makes those components.
Samsung also – yeah, Samsung makes the LED screen for their phones and some of the semiconductors.
So yeah, so Samsung's rooting for you to keep buying those $1,000 phones.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like saying I'm going to buy America – and the engine's Mitsubishi.
Right.
And it's
made in Mexico.
Assembled in Mexico.
This made in like, this.
Yeah,
anyway.
Good luck with that. Good luck. Yeah. Good luck with that.
It's amazing.
You know what the scary thing is? You know what I thought was the scariest thing ever was the Google robots in the woods.
No.
They just went up there.
If you're going, is this the rat story?
Yes.
Dude, this is crazy. So like a biochem guy. Like, and this is the shit that fascinates me. They just for shits and giggles, someone decided it would be a great idea to implant essentially mini human brains inside rats just to see what would happen.
Where do they grow these mini human brains?
A petri dish and then inside the rats.
Okay.
And so they put them in and then bad things started to happen. And when I say bad things started to happen, I mean that they started to fuse with the nervous systems of the rats, and they started making decisions about blood flow and things like this going on in the rats' bodies. We don't need rats with human brains.
No, and this is how Planet of the Apes started.
I'm pretty sure this is how the movie Willard started. Yeah, no. Yeah, exactly. It's not going to be Planet of the Apes. It's going to be Planet of the Rats.
No, but I think I was reading in the article, they're like something about like there's an ethics committee that's like, no.
But yeah, well, that's after the fact, and it's already been done. So now what?
Now they know it can be done.
You can't, it's like Napster. You can't put the genie back in the bottle. It doesn't work.
That's
that
what
way.
I need. Cows going like, hey, Fred. Hey, George. Like, what?
Is today my day?
Yeah, exactly. Go for a nice steak. Yeah, I don't. That one creeps me out because you know that there's scientists doing. Well, they're cloning sheep, aren't they? They're doing a whole bunch of weird crap.
Since these are human brains, can they put these animals down, or do they now have human rights? Like, what makes something human?
Oh man, don't
come on, Randy, shut up.
Yeah, exactly, shut up, Randy.
So last week we didn't get to the story last week, but there was a thing that came out about Facebook. Basically, Sean Parker basically ousted Zuckerberg and said, "Hey, we know
ousted.
Outed, whatever." Yeah. That segment brought to you by Heineken. outed Zuckerberg, basically saying we knew that. You know, the like feature triggered like a dopamine thing in the brain. And that's why people can't stop posting because they get that immediate feedback.
It's that instant gratification. And, yeah.
Yeah. Now it's gotten to the point where like I don't get what's going on in kids' brains. Like I got two kids that are in middle school.
Right.
So I can speak to this. But like the stories are astronomical now about kids cyberbullying themselves so they can get that. Oh, Billy, you got cyberbullied.
Get that sympathy reaction, yeah.
And you get the sympathy reaction.
Oh, and it's weird. And they talked about how, Ask.fm was the one that had happened the most frequently on, where there were a couple of different complaints where they traced the origin IP address back to the same one as had posted the question, it started the account. And so it was literally people just like cyberbullying themselves trying to get the attention. And it's
sad.
It's weird. But I mean, it feeds into that whole, this is why, dude, keep your effing kids off social media, man. I mean, mine are 10 and 8. No, you're not going to have a Facebook account. No, you don't need to be on Snapchat. No, you don't need, no, you just don't. It's not a thing. Like, I don't want them in that world. I mean, it's the most wretched hive of scum and villainy. And you and I both, we talked about, Gretchen wants to start a podcast.
She does.
That's great. What's she going to do when I remember what was it years ago when she was doing Vine?
She got one
negative comment and she was done and stomping upstairs.
Yep.
It's not any prettier now than it was a couple years ago. And that's the kind of crap I don't get it.
And you know what I don't get? People that have the time to find the Millennium Falcon on aerial Google Maps.
You know what? But good for them. They apparently Disney tried to hide the Millennium Falcon with
storage containers,
with shipping containers.
Yeah, shipping. Sorry.
Yeah, they had a ring of shipping containers around the Millennium Falcon. But somebody was studying, because nerds, the Google Maps or Google Earth views around the studio locations and found the Millennium Falcon. Like, oh, there it is.
Right.
And now what? But oh, there it is.
Yeah, now they got to move it. Now what are they going to
do? But why? We all know what the Falcon looks like. It's not like there's any radical change. It's not like it was like, oh, look, there's three new antenna on it and it should be brr.
We see Chewie and the Porg piloting into the trailer. So why hide it?
Oh, my God, the Porg.
Why would you have it in an airplane hangar like normal people?
Like they used to back in the day.
Right.
Yeah. No, I don't get it. Who knows?
Hey, we're coming up on the bottom of the hour. We're going to take a quick break. We are going to be back with the man himself, Ken Daniels from the Detroit Red Wings, talking about his new book, If These Walls Could Talk. This is the IT and the D Show.
And we'll be right back.
Thank you.
IT in the D. Read. Meet. Listen. Networking Detroit, one beer at a time.
Hey, this is John Schneider from Nip Tuck Smallville, the haves and the have-nots. Oh, Dr. Quinn, hot in Cleveland. Secret Lives of the American Teenager and just about everything you can possibly imagine. And oh, yeah, the Dukes of Hazzard. You're listening to Bob and Dave. It's the IT in the D Show.
itinthed.com.
Welcome back. Thanks for hanging out with us. This is segment two, episode 222. That'll only happen once, of the IT in the D show, broadcasting live here in Studio One in Podcast Detroit in beautiful Royal Oak, Michigan. Bob the sales guy here, hanging out with Dave the Geek. Randy, I do the Twitter's Walker, is in studio. Find us online, itinthed.com, because we are IT in the D. And
you still aren't.
One other thing we forgot to talk about is we did launch our Career Academy initiative down at the Detroit School.
Down at DSDT. Yeah.
Yep. And we had about 60 people show up that were
– we figured maybe 10 would show up.
Four.
We had a lot more than that.
But yeah. If we're retraining folks, if you know anyone that's in dire need of a career change or wants to start off in IT, check us out on itinthed.com/learn and click the Career Academy page and sign up. We're signing people up until the state says stop.
So. Yep.
But hey, we are very lucky enough to be joined by Mr. Ken Daniels, the voice of the Detroit Red Wings and the author of If These Walls Could Talk. How you doing, Ken?
Great. It's a party in here. You guys, Royal Oaks, I know why Royal Oak wasn't that busy tonight. They're all here. So,
but I think if these walls could talk, they would say, Scotty, please stop painting us.
Right.
I didn't put the Scotty Bowman paint story in. I figured it's been told so many times.
Right.
But I don't know. There's some truth to it, I guess. But you never know with Scotty.
So you have been the guy announcing Red Wings games on Fox Sports for
21 years now.
Wow!
It makes Mickey and I are the longest serving TV duo currently in the NHL because Bob Miller in Los Angeles retired and Ralph Strangis had left Dallas, and then ultimately Dave Strader took over, and it's his Hall of Fame night, and we lost Dave to cancer, which was really unfortunate. And Dave was here 2 years before I arrived, and actually it was Dave Strader who I was doing the playoffs in Buffalo for Hockey Night in Canada, and Strades came up to me and said, Mickey Redman wants me to let you know that they're replacing the guy who replaced me in Detroit, and the job's going to be open. So that's I was working for Hockey Night and got my tape to the Red Wings, and that would have been May of 97 and then was hired September 6th. It was a long process.
I would say calling hockey has to be, out of all the sports I can think of, by far the most difficult simply because of the speed of the game. I mean, how do you get it to where you got to be – you got to see it in slow motion or different from us.
Yeah, you know what? I played it from – as I talk about in the book, I did – you know, kids today, they start seriously at one.
Crazy.
Coming out of the womb with skates on must hurt. But they start so early. I really didn't start till I was 8, and I picked it up pretty quickly.
See, I started playing when I was 6.
Did you?
So, yeah.
Yeah. I didn't – I was born in 59, and I started around the time that the Leafs won their last Stanley Cup friggin' 50 years ago, 1967. So that's sort of when I started playing. But hockey's – you know, I've been around – I played high school hockey for Mike Keenan. And then working for the Maple Leafs in Toronto, there was Cliff Fletcher and Pat Burns was the head coach. And I come to Detroit, and there's Ken Holland and Scotty Bowman and Mike Babcock. So I learned the game from some great people. As for calling it, I don't know. To me, baseball's pretty tough only because there's so much damn time.
I'm not so much time to fill.
Yeah, being 5'7" or whatever I am, I was never going to be a basketball guy. I wasn't going to be Spud Webb. I knew
it's
that.
It's young blood. Thank God there's still a sport for middle-sized white boys.
Exactly right. And, you know, to me, basketball, I've never been a basketball fan. I always thought start at 50 all and play to 100. I don't know. Now, as I talk about in the book, one night I'm out with Bowman, and we'll keep it clean. And Scotty and I are at ESPN Zone in Colorado. We're going to play St. Louis two nights later. So we're at ESPN Sports Zone talking about basketball and hockey and the difference. And it's March Madness going on. And we had a small TV in our booth because we're preparing for the St. Louis game. And there's basketball all around us on every TV. And I don't know who is playing. And the place just erupted. And Scotty looks up at the screen as only Scotty could do. And he says, F me. It's 5-2. It's 5-2. And he's right. At some point in that game, it's going to be 42, 37, 51, 45. What does it matter? It was 5-2. So hockey always just fascinated me. I went to bed at 8 years old listening to Foster Hewitt on the radio underneath my pillow when my parents sent me to bed. I've always been fascinated by the game. So to me, baseball, actually, there's more time to tell. hockey, the trick to doing play-by-play in hockey, and I tell people, and through the dating world, you know, you date women who don't really know the game, and I can't follow hockey. I said, don't follow the puck. Follow where the puck's going. If the guy's behind the net, see who's circling. You know where the puck's going, if it's north, south, or whatever. It's going that direction. Follow where it's going. See who's going.
I think over the years, I have bought more copies of The Girlfriend's Guide to Hockey than any other person on the planet.
That's the key right there. Just tell them that. So to me, I don't know why. I guess it is. It's fast. But you're also not calling every guy so-and-so to so-and-so to so-and-so to so-and-so. That would drive me nuts.
Sure.
So, you know, you've got your time to look down and see who it is. But I have a pretty good short-term memory, and I memorize rosters pretty quickly.
Huh.
So, you know, half the guys anyway.
Yeah.
See, and the fourth liners don't get on that much. Well, they do more now than they did in the old days.
Well, and it does, what's been the biggest change that you've seen? You know, everybody talks about, you know, the changing face of the game and, you know, more parity and the salary caps and all that stuff. Like, so, I mean, what have you noticed over the span of that 21 years that really, you know, stands out the most to you?
The speed of the game.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, back, I've been doing it since 1990, calling hockey. Yeah, the speed of the game. And sometimes it's just a race to nowhere. They chip it. And what happens? You're watching it go in. Nothing's going on except a bunch of guys skating and trying to hit each other. So I think this, the skill too, the speed and the skill, the guys are so much more skilled than they were in the old days. They were great players then, but the game was slower. And Phil Esposito was seriously in the 70s taking two-minute shifts. Two minutes. They're 35 seconds and off. Franz Nielsen for the Red Wings takes really short shifts. I think it's about 25 seconds. And it can sometimes screw up the lines. Mike Keenan, when he had McGillney and Bure together in Vancouver and both wingers on the same side, McGillney would stay out so damn long that it screwed up all the lines and Bure would miss a shift. And finally, Keenan said, screw this, and kept him out there for five straight minutes. Didn't even notice. He did the same thing to Kovalev with the Rangers, kept him out there for half the period because he took so long to come off. He said, keep going. He loved it. The rest of the guys are killing themselves on the bench.
Right.
And Kovalev's just skating, didn't even know it. Guys couldn't do that today. As great of shape as they are in, I think a 2 or 3 minute, you're going to be exposed if you're out there that long. So just the speed of the game, the skill of the game. I like it. Highly skilled. I love the slashing they're calling this year. That's why goal scoring's up. Guys are getting opportunities now. Penalties are being called. And now the guys are adapting. So they're not slashing and you're seeing better scoring opportunities. That there's so many things have changed. The goaltenders are so good.
They're so much bigger.
They're bigger. Scouts aren't even looking at anyone under 6 feet. You're not even being scouted.
Well, you watch Slapshot these days, and the goalie's the little teeny gear. And How do they stop anything back then?
I don't know. Well, the guys maybe weren't shooting. They weren't composite sticks like they are. They're the old wood skits, but the curves were crazy. And to think they ever played without a goalie mask. Glenn Hall played 502 consecutive games and a majority of them without a goalie mask.
I played goalie. Like all the way, I played at BU, and I mean, and that I went through two helmets in one game, taking slap shots. So I mean, I can't.
Did you ever have the form fitting mask? Like
no,
they did? Like my Bernie Perrant was my idol, and they had that old.
No, I always had the cat's eye cages.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know how the goalies did it. And 502 consecutive games. I mean, and with bad travel, now everyone travels well, and they're on trains and. I don't know how they did it.
Yeah. No, it's amazing. Crazy.
And you hated each other and the brawls that broke out. I was never a big proponent of fighting. I could care less. I think there is that in the game that there should be some form of intimidation that the good players need to be protected. But a fight just for the sake of fighting was always stupid to me anyway.
Yeah. So you don't miss the old 70s Philly Flyers, Quebec Nordiques, the bench clearing
brawls.
Before
the games.
Yeah.
Before the games. Philadelphia and
see, that's what I grew up. I was living in New England, so it was the Boston Bruins, Montreal Canadiens, Quebec Nordiques, and every time any combination of those teams got together, it was a new record for penalty minutes in a single game.
They broke out before the game, and I remember when Mike Keenan was coaching Philadelphia and Ron Hextall was there, and a fight broke out in the pregame warm-up, a brawl, and Keenan in the cage area by the dressing room where they kept the goalie sticks and stuff, Ron Hextall, who's nuts in a good way though, happened to be in there, and Keenan locked him in there. He locked him in the cage, knowing if he went out on the ice, he'd be suspended. He'd kill somebody. So he locked him in the cage so he couldn't go out. Those were the days. Those were the good old days. I mean, I still love watching Slapshot and that stuff, but the game's great today. I wish they could slow it down a little bit. Scotty Bowman had the idea, and I think I talk about this and no, maybe I did in the book. You write so much in the book, can't remember now. 300 pages, you forget what you put in and what you didn't. But Bowman always had the idea of having something like a ringette line, not right across the ice, but maybe at the top of the faceoff circles as a point, so that the defenseman would have to make a play out of his own zone, at least to get to the top of the faceoff circle, to make a pass to the opposition blue line. So the center ice would still not be in for purposes of a two-line pass for those that understand hockey.
Right.
It's not in now. In the old days, you couldn't pass from your own end across center. So now you can. But now defensemen go back. They whip it around the boards. They chip it to a guy across center who chips it into the other zone. And then it's a race. So now if you had the defenseman coming to the top of the faceoff circle to make a play up the ice, it'll result in perhaps more forechecking, maybe a turnover in their own zone. Defenseman can't just wire it around the boards. I think it would work. I've spoken to other coaches to say, we'll figure that out.
Yeah.
We'll stop that from happening. It won't do anything for the game. Coaches figure out everything. It's amazing. They're smart. Yeah.
So you came in right after the 97 season.
Correct.
So the first cup in 42 years.
Yeah.
So
I came in the second one.
Right. So, yeah. So you came in during that summer in the off season with all of the accident and Vladdy and all that stuff. And so I had like, that's a heavy scene to walk into. I mean, like what was that first game like? What was that prep like?
I didn't have a lot of prep because it was a heavy scene. And I remember being at home in Toronto, the 11 o'clock news on CTV. I remember it well. And they led with the limo accident that night. And I thought, I'm so far in the back burner. Rightfully so. They got other stuff to worry about. They're not thinking about me. And I'd gone down for an interview. I don't know. It would have been probably late May to interview for the job.
Right.
Didn't hear anything from them, and nor would I expect to, because there's probably a lot of people interviewing for it. But I was still with Hockey Night in Canada. I was doing morning radio in Toronto. I'd been let go by CBC Local Television in December on a staff cutback, but I still had other jobs.
Yeah.
So I wasn't really worried. And, but at the time I thought, this is going to be a long time. And I didn't hear anything until really early September.
Wow.
And, at that time, Hockey Night in Canada had offered me a deal and I decided to stay. And I said, well, okay. And they gave me a 3-year deal. And the night after I went for dinner with John Shannon, who was their executive producer, and agreed on a handshake deal, the next day, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, my agent called and said,
of course,
you have a deal from the Red Wings. But I didn't like the deal. It wasn't long enough. And I thought I wasn't going to move my family for that term. So I turned it down.
Okay.
Then the newspaper guys in Toronto were calling me when there were newspapers with actually media critics, and the Toronto Sun was calling, the Globe and Mail was calling, and the Toronto Star was calling, and had them on hold because the press release went out from CBC that I was staying. Now I got a decision to make in Detroit, because then they called back a half an hour later, and after I got crap from the guy in LA who said, you know how hard we worked to get you here and you turned it down? Arthur Smith, who's now running Dick Clark Productions, I believe. But Arthur was my boss at CBC. So it's who you know, right? And he went out to Los Angeles and he was now heading up Fox Sports in LA. So he said, I can't believe you turned – what are you doing? And I told him why, and he said, okay. And then they called back, you got the job. And now I got the newspaper guys on hold going, no, I'm not staying. So I called CBC and told them, and they said – my boss said to me at CBC, you know, I can offer you 20 – they had 27 weeks because every Saturday, right?
On right.
Canadian Canada. I can probably give you 20 plus playoffs, but the only way you're going to get better – and I hadn't been doing it that long on TV. I've been doing radio, but I hadn't been doing TV play-by-play for maybe 4 years, 3 years. So the only way you're going to get better is to go to Detroit. So after that, and they came back with a better deal, the decision was easy, and I've never regretted it. Worked out great. So that year, really, to your question, I didn't have much time to prepare. It was like, boom, and I was at training camp. So,
well, and not a bad year to come in, because then you've got another return trip to the Stanley Cup Finals and a win.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the start of the good times here, I guess, you know, because then you've got that. Then you've got the 0-2 team, which that had to be just amazing for you to call the 0-2 team.
The 0-2 team, because so many players at different stages in their career, was very cool. And I remember being on Redbird and seeing, you know, you sat near Fedorov on the plane, and it was so great. One of the greatest Red Wings of all time, for sure. And then Lidstrom and Yzerman and Shanahan and Bowman and everybody else. But then you're sitting on Redbird that first game. I remember traveling and seeing Hasek come on and Robitaille come on and Hull come on and a guy who walked really strangely named Pavel Datsyuk. It was yeah, that was pretty incredible. I thought, oh my God, this is like Hall of Fame beyond anything.
It was crazy. An all-star game.
It was. And every night it was just fun and you never knew. You thought you'd rarely lose. Obviously, they did. That's the game. Nobody can be great for 82. And, you know, and just sitting up there with Bowman and listening to him as I, and, you know, and Scotty could get in points where if you're in his doghouse, as I was at times, you were sort of screwed.
Wasn't everybody?
Everyone was. And you had to be. And it's how you handled it to get out of it. And,
cause you mentioned Sergey. So, I mean, I knew Sergey really, really well. I mean, I ran his website for a long time. Oh, yeah, he was like best friends with my old neighbor. I remember when Scotty threw him back on defense.
Sure.
Trying to get him to choke up a little bit. And it was, yeah.
You see, and how amazing is that, that, you know, and as a team like that, and you're now playing defense, you're going back on D.
Yeah.
And nobody thought anything of like, it. And guys are worried about ice time today and whatever. And in today's world, I'm not so sure how that would work. I remember listening to Bowman, who could, you know, bitch on the plane and he'd be reading the newspaper and he'd be swearing. And I remember because it was Ted Colfin of the Detroit News had done his report cards. And he said, F me. I want Ted Kaufman as my teacher. That's all I heard, right? And I see him holding up the newspaper. And I said, what are you talking about? And we're on the plane. I said, what are you talking about? He said, He gave Brendan Shanahan a B plus. I want him as my teacher because Shanny happened to be in his doghouse, right? So, you know, that week he was mad at Brendan and the next week he'd be mad at somebody else.
So one of the stories I know is in your book. So, all right, which cup year was it that it got locked in the car at your daughter's school? And how did that happen?
That would have been – was it the 02 or 98? I think it was the 02 year. Was it the 02 year? I'm trying to remember which year. And anyway, it was at Doherty Middle School. And Mike Bolt, the keeper of the cup, and I surprised everybody. I took it to my son's school and I took it to my daughter's school and the Stanley Cup and Ray come in and closes the door and the keys are in the car. Now, it's a good thing the middle school was not at recess to hear the F-bombs that were flying at that particular moment. So it's in West Bloomfield, and the call goes out to – because we need to get the cup out of the car, and the call goes out to the West Bloomfield Police Department. You haven't seen so many patrol cars show up so quickly. They had everything out to jack open that window. It was crazy. And they were there. They were relatively quickly and we all got pictures with it. So that was pretty funny.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Locked it in the car. Yes, they did. We, you know, and it was nice because we get a day with the cup and not every team has to do that, but we do. And I can surprise the kids that way. You know what? I think it would have been 98. I'm trying to remember now and daughter's age at the time, middle school. She's 23 now. So
yeah, that would make sense.
Would it?
Yeah. Well, as you figure 15 years ago. It could have been 02
years ago. It could have been 02. Yeah.
So you got to drink out of it once.
You know what? It probably would have been 02. So there you go.
Got to drink out of it once. Didn't get sick. I was amazed. None of us.
6, 4, 5, 6, 7. No, it was not. It was
98. Okay.
No.
02. Or 06.
08.
08. Okay.
08. I never mind. That's why you see. This is why I'm writing the book. So 20 years from now, I'll remember what happened.
Right. Yeah.
That's why. You forget.
You got 21 years with Mickey Redmond in the booth.
Yeah.
The Mickey-isms.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's got to make you crack at least twice a night.
We try to make each other crack, and that's what's the best. Last year at the Joe, we had you talk about what you remember, Joe Louis Arena, and I thought the same thing as we had a clip from Justin Abdelkader that he did. It was the smell of the building. As I'm gone from the Joe now, I realize I miss most the intimacy. I don't miss anything else really from that bar. Yeah. I miss the people. I miss the intimacy, knowing where you're going, although I'm learning my way now around Little Caesars. But we were in one of our latter games in the season, and we had a clip of Justin Abdelkader because we went to all the players. What do you miss most? And the clip from Justin was that he's going to miss the smell of the building.
It was as distinct as it got.
Oh, there was. And it wasn't all just piss and beer and whatever in the stairwell, as people think. There was just a smell as you walked in. But that night – there happened to be the smell of weed that you was unmistakable from the first period on. And I'm calling the game and I'm going, someone here has got joints going. And it wasn't just a vaporizer. I mean, somebody was getting high. So we went with a clip of Justin out of commercial, and he talks about the smell of the building. Now, by this time, Mickey smelled it too. And Justin says, the smell of the building. We come back, and the game's on, and Mickey said, there's a smell in the building, all right. He goes, what's that song? Doobie-doobie-doo. Like Strangers in the Night.
Yeah.
So I start to laugh just as number 25 goes back to get the puck for the Red Wings. And I said, yes, green is prevalent in the building tonight. It's Mike Greenberg. So Mickey starts to laugh. Off comes the headset. It's just we try to, if we can make one another laugh during the game. And you know, you can go as play-by-play. You can go off on a tangent. Sometimes yeah. we do. It's going to piss some people off that it's not, as we talked about earlier, player to player. Who's in the, you got a TV in front of you. I think you can follow.
See what's going on. Yeah,
sometimes we get sidetracked. For sure we do. But you know what? If we're having fun, hopefully that's conveyed. And it is about fun. You're going to be some games that are just crappy. And you've got to make something out of it. And that's when you really earn your money, right? I mean, games that are great, you're just going to call the game. It's okay. Yeah. So we do. Mickey and I have a lot of fun. And he's gone through two cancers, which I went through it. He went through it with the death of my son. And to have, you know – We've become very close over the years. Obviously, our wives are close. So to be in the booth with a broadcast partner that you're not just hockey season, we spend time on the road together, even though he doesn't do all the games because of celiac disease, we talk during the summertime. So it's a lot of fun. My first time I came with Mickey, 98, it was November of 98, and he was still smoking cigarettes. And thank God, I mean, in hindsight, that he got the cancer, because got him to stop smoking butts. So the first year, I'm new. And it's November of 98, and I asked him just before a game started, I said, Mick, because of those days, you could actually smoke in the Joe.
Yep.
I don't know who else was, but the smoke was filtering out of our booth. And at this time, by now, it's sort of choking me because I wasn't used to it. I came from hockey night. Now it's bothering me. So I said to Mickey, he brought up enough nerve because he was the guy here. I didn't want to step on many toes. And I said to Mick, do you mind if you just maybe smoked in the intermission? And then I'll leave the booth and you can have your butts, just not during plays. Okay. So we go to commercial with 2 minutes left in the period and he lights up a butt. And they're Marlboros. So I said to him, you know, we're going to commercial. You couldn't wait? And he said, whoa, you got 18 minutes, pal. Don't push it.
Nice, nice.
So that's how I knew to maybe, okay, don't go there. So yeah, no, we have a lot of fun. It's been a good time.
So how is the, you know, I guess changing of the guard been from your perspective? I mean, you know, from the days of, you know, those early seasons where you've got, you know, Yzerman stepping in, taking over, taking command, you know, he's gone down in Tampa Bay as the GM. You've got, you know, Zetterberg was the guy for, you know, Lidstrom was the core, Zetterberg, and now this new crop is coming up. How's that going from your perspective?
Change is inevitable. And in a salary cap world, and the Red Wings until last year were the only team to make the playoffs every year since 05,
yeah.
The salary cap world. So it was bound to happen. I mean, people can criticize, you know, what Ken Holland's done and contracts, et cetera. And yes, there are some contracts that in hindsight you wish you didn't have, for sure. But you're not drafting high, and people talk about the draft and Ken Holland draft. Well, as much as I love scouts that were here before, Joe McDonnell and Jim Nill, they took Tomas Yurko.
Yeah.
Ken Holland isn't seeing these guys. The last time I checked, Nikita Kucherov, maybe the best player going right now outside McDavid and Crosby in the NHL is Nikita Kucherov. He went after Tomas Yurko. Brandon Saad went after Tomas Yurko. Boone Jenner went after Tomas Yurko. They like Tomas Yurko. Ken Holland's not out seeing these guys. So there are many draft picks that are now, who should be when they're taken in 13 and 14 or 12, should be coming to fruition now. It's a 5 or 6 year plan before yep. these guys come through. So you can blame them for some, whatever, but it also goes back that way, and you're not drafting very high. But that's when you do draft and you're missing on second rounders and third rounders, it'll wind up screwing you down the road. So they're trying to recover from that. I think it's been pretty seamless up until lately. Really, I you know, and obviously you missed the playoffs and now you're stuck. Where do you go? Bottoming out and tanking. Honestly, is not an option. What if you tank? Well, look where Colorado, they had 48 points last year.
Yeah.
They didn't get the top two picks.
Yeah.
Philadelphia came from out of nowhere in New Jersey to get Heischer. You know, it didn't. So there's no guarantee. And what if you don't get it? and then you've bottomed out. And if you don't get the right pick, you can go down the list of guys who drafted incorrectly with high picks that didn't work out.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a crapshoot. So you're sort of stuck now. You want to still be competitive, and they are, but where you finish, there's no guarantees. And this year's a great draft, by the way. It'd be a great year to finish last and get, if you can get that top pick, Rasmus Dahlin, the defenseman from Sweden, a stud. He's a cross between Hedman and Carlson. I'm not saying anybody's going to be Lidstrom, because there may never be another one. Bobby Orr is my hero, and Lidstrom's right there behind him. There may never be another one. But this Rasmus Dahlin is great. Evgeny Svechnikov's brother, Andre, who broke his hand in Barry, he's a high-scoring winger, almost not quite like Ovechkin type, but, you know, maybe a better skater. So Svechnikov's going to be a hell of a player. They got Quinn Hughes, a defenseman of Michigan. You got Brady Tkachuk. The top five, six, seven picks, unlike this year where there were two, next June, there are six or seven.
Averages are better, yeah.
You want to be in there. You want to be in there. So where the Red Wings go, I don't know. I want to see them be competitive. If it doesn't work out, injuries happen, who knows?
So you've been all over U.S. and Canada, just about every rink?
Every rink.
How do you rate Little Caesars?
The best, honestly, in terms of what it offers, fans, amenities. I just look at from Joe Louis, the concourse is four times as wide as anything else. The gondola where we are, it's one of the best positions in the league. We're close to the ice. Montreal is 65 feet. If you can picture it from the near boards, we talk about offset, meaning back.
Yep.
I'm not talking about height is all different, but offset on an angle back, we're 67 feet, Montreal 65. Madison Square Garden rebuilt at $3 billion is pretty good. They're close. The older buildings are crappy booths. They may be just as close, but they're cramped. So our booth at Little Caesars Arena is spectacular. And the best part of it, and I tell this to broadcasters around the league, and they're absolutely shocked that the Ilitch family, and Chris mentioned to me 4 or 5 years ago now, you know, if we do a new building, what do you want? And I said, well, I think we'd want a gondola, which means overhanging. And the gondola came to Maple Leaf Gardens when they were building it in the 30s. And Foster Hewitt went to the fifth floor of the old Eaton's building in downtown Toronto and looked out and said, from here, I can tell the color of feather in a woman's hat. I can see what it is. This is the perfect height. And when they built it, an advertising executive from McLaren Advertising went into Foster Hewitt's booth and said, this looks like the gondola of a cruise ship.
Yeah.
And that's how the gondola came into being in the name. So it overhangs the ice. It's high. It's about 95 feet high. I think Montreal is pretty close there, about 87. But the bright lights at Little Caesars Arena are so good.
Oh, the lighting's
insane.
The LED lighting,
the lighting is insane. So all that, to me, makes for a great building. That's how I'm looking at it. Well, you're close to the action.
You know, when I went, the old concession stands they made away with, they're almost like you're going to like little pubs, little bars.
It is. And the restaurants, I've eaten at Kid Rock's place and Mike's Pizza. I tell you, the food is fantastic. It really is. If you've never eaten down there before, and now it's a destination spot to go. You know, where did you go before?
Well,
that entire
district that they're building out there is going to be insane.
I don't know. I never went downtown for dinner. Now with friends, you know, my wife and I will go down, if not twice a month, once a month.
Yeah.
Just to go downtown, different restaurants.
That fourth floor makes me dizzy, though. I'll tell you that right now.
Being up there?
No, I didn't go up, but I just watched.
Shared heights?
not like that kind of heights, but like it just looked like I had friends that felt like they were leaning forward the whole time.
Well, that's what it is, because you're so close. And if you sit in the gondola seating on the other side with that glass in front of you, if you don't like heights, and they tell you, and some people don't, they can't sit up there. I get it. It's sort of – my sphincter gets a little tight too if I'm up there. You may not want to be right there, but I get it. But from where we are, our point – it takes a little getting used to, but I guess my point with the Ilitch is asking us years ago was that other broadcasters said, you mean they actually asked your opinion? And they're shocked. Seriously.
Yeah.
I've had at least five or six tell me that. And I said, yeah. They said, nobody ever consulted us. And if you go to Edmonton, which has the best player in the world in Connor McDavid, their press box and broadcast location is so friggin' far away, the game's a guessing game. When I did the game in Edmonton a year ago, and my stats guy at the end of the game, who does all the visitors coming in Edmonton, said, you honestly, and I take pride in this because he said, and I screw up some nights for sure, but he said, you are the best one so far. So what do you mean? He said, you didn't miss anybody. Because I go down before the game and I knew to check 93. You can see McDavid white tape on their stick to a 97, an 83 to a 93. Does he shoot right? Does he shoot left? Because when the numbers get jumbled up there, and the Oiler numbers are a little bigger this year than they were last year, and you're only in there once, you don't see them that much. I can tell the Red Wings for the most part, you know, Nielsen 51, Ouellette 61, they go in there hunched over. You can sometimes screw up both left-hand shots. You're not always sure, right? I know when I mess up in my head and I'm pissed at myself. But you go into another building, you got to know white tape, black tape, right shot, left shot. You're not always sure. And that's, you're so far away in that place. Oh my God, it's awful. I couldn't imagine calling. And that's why the home team has actually gotten to go down low to be closer, because it was so difficult for them. So, you know, there are many lousy buildings, even the newer ones. And the other thing that Little Caesars Arena has, and I mentioned on the air the other night, that the Calgary Saddle Dome has, which was built in 88, and they're looking for a new building. But they had the Olympics there in 88, and it's an international size ice.
Yep.
Now every rink is 85 wide. International is 100. I think that's too wide. I'd like to see them go to 90 wide, 2.5 per side. Because the game, if you watch the games in Europe, it's like nothing happens.
Oh, just so much more open, yeah.
Absolutely, and nothing happens. So here, if you just had a little more room because players are bigger, and I remember being on the radio in 88 in Toronto doing morning sports, talking about it, saying, down the road, we're going to get all – and I talk about this in my book. We're going to have all these new buildings. They should all have the ability to go to international size ice. Only Little Caesars Arena has the ability to go to little size ice, international
really?
Size ice. How is that? And people say, well, if you go to bigger ice, you're losing the best seats in the house, the first two rows. No, you're losing the last two rows because you're just moving them around back two rows. You're not losing the first two rows. You're losing the cheapest seats at the top.
Yep.
So it's not a big deal. But to retrofit a building is millions of dollars with the ice plant and everything else. So it's too bad. Every team now has a new building since 88, and they didn't make
that choice.
Wow. And I don't know how much bigger they're going to be 10 years from now. They might be, and then you think the game can get clogged now. Wait for it.
So, hey, we're going to cut you loose. You're on a clock. Well, you said you
flew by.
Yeah. No, 10 after. You said you wanted to get out by 10.
But we'll keep you here.
Okay. We're having fun. You want to keep going? We're good.
What do you got?
What do I?
Well, I know the
I mean money to stay.
No. All right. How about another 10?
Perfect.
If you need me.
Done.
If you don't just do it to be nice.
No.
No, no. This is whatever you want. You're good.
No, whatever you want.
Well, I know one of the things you said, the most gratifying interview you did was with your dad. Why so?
Well, he was 90. My dad had me when he was 45, which I don't know if that's strange today, but back then it was. I remember coming home one day from school and I was 10 years old. And I thought my parents looked old. So my dad at the time is 55, my mom's 50, and I'm 10. So I walked home with my friend Marty. You don't see many Martys today. Anyway, I walked home with my friend Marty and I said, how old's your mother? And he said, 29. I went, holy crap. So I went home and asked my mother why she was so old. I feel terribly now, but back then. So I wasn't close with my dad because he's 3 years, I'm 58. So when I was 10, he was 3 years younger than I am now. Now I personally couldn't imagine having a 10-year-old right now.
Yeah. I had a kid at 40. I had a kid at 40.
Did you?
My wife's 42, yeah.
Okay, but still it's a little younger than even that was.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That's okay. So I thought I didn't have a great relation, probably wasn't close to him. He went out golfing quite a bit. So, you know, probably I was his fourth kid. Right. There, my oldest is 13 years older than me. So there's 13, 11, 7 than me. My mom had four miscarriages before me. So there was a lot of work to get me. They wanted a girl. I think I wore a dress the first 4 years. I didn't wear it. I said, stop this. This is madness. So
I promise I'm not going to isolate that clip right there.
Thank you. So later in life, though, my dad and I grew really tight. And at 93, I brought him down to his hockey day in Canada. And it was at the Air Canada Center because he was still living in Toronto. 93, living on his own. My mom had passed a few years earlier than that. And it was just great for him being with me for the first time. And there are pictures of my dad and me in the book. And my dad wrote me a letter on his computer because he learned how to play piano, was on the computer, was driving on his own, living on his own, playing golf at 93. It was amazing. So to be able to be on the air with him and show him how proud I was, and he wrote me and I published the letter in the book, how thankful he was and how proud he was of me, meant a lot. Because I probably didn't show him the respect that I know I didn't show him the respect that I should have when I was younger. So to be part of that, and we're on the air live, and he talked about, you know, growing up in Toronto with Teeter Kennedy, his favorite player, and Charlie Conacher. And he said, you know, when we used to play on the streets, it was all frozen, and we didn't have hockey pucks, couldn't afford them. We used to use horse droppings that were frozen as hockey pucks. He said, can I say horse droppings on the air? I said, you just did. So that was the pregame show, and he came on with us again in the second intermission. I'm interviewing. My dad's here on this hockey day in Canada, and he's sitting with me in the booth, and I ask him a question, and there's this long pause. And I'm thinking one of those moments, uh-oh. You know those pauses like you guys may have that seem like a minute, but they're really only 3 seconds?
3 seconds, yeah.
So we finish, and he looks at me, and he says, sorry about that. And I said, as Canadians say. And I said, why is that? And he said, I paused. I got shocked. And I said, what? He said, I looked at the monitor and saw how old I looked. I said, crap, you're 93 with age spots. What do you think? Yeah. What do you think you look like? You know, but and fast forward to that. And then just before he passed at 96, about 2 weeks before he died,
wow.
3 weeks before, and still living on his own, Kenny Holland was driving in to scout a game in Toronto. And we were going to play the Leafs, but he was going a day or two early and we're off. He said, why don't you drive in with me and go see your dad? I said, okay. So he dropped me off at my father's house. That's great. My dad drove and we went shopping that night, and we're in the grocery store, and my dad holds up some bananas and looks at me from across the a good 30 feet away and says, hey, no one my age should be buying green bananas, should they? And I thought, that's a good point. You probably shouldn't be. So we went for dinner. We had a great time. And then a week after that, he was going to study for his driving test at age 96 with his girlfriend, Mildred. You got to be old if you're named Marvin and Mildred.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, really.
It's a rule.
Yeah, for sure. So Mildred called my brother and said, your dad was supposed to pick me up at 6:15. We were going to go for dinner and study for a driving test. He's never late. And my brother went to his house, and my dad had a stroke and was in bed all day and couldn't speak anymore. And we don't know how much he knew. So I drove back in and saw him, and he passed a week later. But that's how life works. That if Kenny Holland didn't suggest, you know, take you in to see your dad, I wouldn't have had that time with him. We had a great time. And my wife and I double dated with him and his girlfriend. And, you know, it was great. I joked with my dad at that age, and he had a girlfriend. I said, do you need any Viagra? And he said, oh, hell no, that'll kill me. I just need a hug. I thought that's love and life. That's love and life right there. So
that's
was
amazing.
Great. So I love the fact that I could be on the air with him. It was great.
That's very cool.
It was nice.
So you made a point here that we gotta get close, but announcers aren't biased.
No, they're not.
Now, I don't want to say I call shenanigans, but, you know, the Dan Millers, you know, there's a bit of homerism.
Let me be clear on this. You're right. They're not biased. But in the book I talk about where people will say, you know, we love when you guys, and I'm glad people love when we do the games. That's great. But they'll say those other announcers, they're so biased. Those national guys, like when Gary Thorne used to do games.
They hate the Red Wings.
Doc Emmerich. They don't hate the Red Wings. They're paid by the game. They don't care.
Yeah.
If it's a playoff series, they want to, trust me, I used to work for Hockey Night in Canada, paid by the game. You want a 7-game series.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah.
If a team's up 3-9, you want that other team to win. It may sound biased, but you're not showing it. I used to do for Hockey Night in Canada, I did all national games. My brother lived in Calgary, still does. And I would call Calgary Vancouver. It was one of the first Hockey Night game I did from Vancouver. My brother, I talked to him, you did a really good job, but you're really pro Canucks. I go, are you serious? He lives in Calgary and he thinks his own brother is pro Canucks. I don't care who wins. National announcers, when you're doing a national game, and I've done a dozen or 15 for NBC now over the years, I don't care who wins. I called Red Wings San Jose when the Red Wings in that streak of 23 straight at home won their 22nd. I called that game on an afternoon game for NBC. Yes, I wanted the Red Wings to win. But I also know that people in San Jose, I don't want them pissed, so you try to even out the call level.
Yeah.
Some people think when I do a goal call, I'm too excited for the visitor. But to me, the game's the thing, and some announcers around the league.
Moment.
Yeah, some announcers around the league. I left, and I was watching a Colorado Avalanche game maybe 5-7 years ago. And I left the room, and I don't know who they were playing. And I walked back in, and the score's tied. And I went, okay, Colorado was up, and I rewound it. And honest to God, it was this. Scores. What are you kidding me? That's a total injustice to the game. I know you work for the home team and I work for the Red Wings. Trust me.
Yeah.
If you ever want to monitor, and you guys, all this nice equipment you have here and all your studios, go and take the level. My Red Wings score will be here, as he points high, and the visiting team will be just below it. but I'm sure not going to do an injustice to anyone scoring a goal, even in the last minute. So announcers are not biased on a national level. Trust me, they don't care who wins. There's no hate to the Red Wings. There's no hate St. Louis Philly, and one wants the other one. You're doing your job. If you're a pro, you're not biased.
So they teach you have to raise your octave up about 8 levels when you do scores. It seems like that's like a –
that would be a Cal call. That would be a Cal call. No, that's Ken Cal Bruce Martin call, not me. So, you know, no, you I think you – I'm naturally – am more excited when the Red Wings score. Sure I am. So is there a bias on a home team? Yeah. Do we want – sure. And are we homers? Yeah, we're paid by the home team. That's what people say. Be critical. You're not going to whip the team. I'm paid by them, yes, and it's not my job to necessarily do that. I'm not an analyst. So there is a way – I like to know actually when players are hurt and if they're in a big slump or maybe they're going through an injury, which we're not, at least I know what it is and that I do know. But I would never give it out on the
air. Upper body, lower body.
They do that. That's not necessarily my thing. But if I know a guy's got a bad wrist and he can't really fire the puck and hasn't scored in 8 games, at least I'll know he's not sucking.
Yeah.
At least I'll know there's something wrong and you can sort of work around it. But it's not necessarily my job to criticize management. And as I talk about in the book, people go, oh, yeah, he's a homer. Oh, far be it from him to criticize anybody. I want to see you, anyone out there, go into work tomorrow, go into your boss's office and go, I think you suck. Yeah. You're doing an awful job. Go ahead. See how long you're around there. See how brave you are. It just doesn't happen. It's not the real world.
So you stay off social media for the most part, people saying that you suck, you know?
Yeah, I don't look at it. Honestly.
Good for you.
No, I don't. I'm not on Twitter. I don't do it. I don't do Facebook that often. No, I don't. I don't think there's a need for it. Everyone's got their opinion. As people have always said, put the people who love you in one hand and put the people who hate you in the other and don't shake.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's the same thing in hockey, right? You can have 5 guys on the team who hate the coach and 10 who love them and another 5 are mediocre. Just try to keep the guys who hate them away from the guys who love them.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't – you're not going to please everybody.
Can't.
Some people are going to hate what I do, the way I call the game, hate my voice, whatever. I hope people don't criticize you at your job every day,
constantly.
And you're okay with that.
It happens.
Well, it does.
You're a jerk.
But how would they feel if they saw it every day and somebody criticizing them, really? And who makes you the authority?
Yeah.
Just like I can't be authority on your job. I can't be authority on a lawyer who goes to work and he had a bad day in court or whatever. And I've never done it before.
Dave, the fries you made today were soggy and
horrible.
Suck.
Yeah. Right.
Exactly. All right. Well, hey, let's get you out of here. This has been... Thank you so
Thank
much.
You.
For
yeah.
coming.
Thank you, guys.
I really, really appreciate it.
Well, you got a bunch of book signings coming up.
I do. We're in, tomorrow night, we're in Dearborn at 6:30. I'm doing a talk there and a Q&A and a book signing. And then we're Barnes & Noble in, or is it the Novi Public Library on Thursday night? I'm losing track now. Might be the Novi,
we'll find out.
Public,
we'll put in the show
Novi
notes.
Public Library
okay.
on Thursday night. And then we're in Windsor at Bibliosis coming up in the following week. So we've got a lot coming. They'll be on my Facebook page. Even though I'm not on there very much, I do appreciate those who send wonderful thoughts. I really do. I mean that sincerely. People on there are, I find to be very nice for the most part. And it's wonderful to see. And I do appreciate it. So we do have some book signings. And and it's available at Amazon, available at Barnes & Noble. They tell me at Costco too, although I haven't been in there, at least in Michigan. So if these walls could talk, and hopefully there's a lot of good Mickey stories, a chapter on Bowman, my career, and it was a lot of fun to do. Thank you.
Fantastic.
Guys. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Been an absolute honor. Ken Daniels, voice of the Detroit Red Wings, author of If These Walls Could Talk. Sincerely appreciate the time.
Thanks, guys.
And I will cut you loose.
Thanks.
This is
you're not coming. I had a great time. I gotta get home. My wife's heading out of town tomorrow. So,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's
yeah.
all. That's all.
We all have to adult.
Exactly. Yeah. Once in a while.
We do.
Once in a while. Thanks, guys.
Hey, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back with Steve Sadler, Terry Bean from IgniteCast. This is the IT and the D Show.
Hey, and we'll be right back.
IT and the D. Read, meet, listen. Networking Detroit. One beer at a time.
Hi, I'm Brittany Daniel from The Game, and you're listening to IT and the D Show.
ITandTheD.com.
Welcome back. Segment 3, episode 222. IT and the D Show broadcasting live here in Studio One in Podcast Detroit, beautiful Royal Oak, Michigan. Bob the sales guy, Dave is geeked, the geek. Randy Walker's in the studio. Find us online, itandthed.com. And
Jack Olson, Ken Daniels.
Oh, you're putting him one up. Oh. And we're going to introduce right now the two most patient guys in the room because they've been here they've been here since minute one and a few minutes before. Not sure if the Big House Bourbon is helping them through it. We got Steve Sadler in the house, Terry Bean, our old friend from Ignite Cast. Gentlemen, how we doing?
We're doing good.
That how was amazing. Doing? What a great segment to be in here for. Wow.
Well, and it doesn't hurt that Steve's a good old Canuckian that was a hockey guy too.
Right.
It's not like he sat here and go like, I don't know what he's talking about.
It's not like Jack Olson where basically he and I sat there and nerded out and the rest of the room was like,
Well, no, I caught it on from Steve earlier where I just hear him go, Like, especially when, like, he's talking about the draft picks and he like knew every one of them. I'm like, I don't even know that, you know.
Can I call it sports ball even though hockey doesn't actually use a ball?
Absolutely.
Sports puck tonight.
So let's dive right into it. You explained to us what IgniteCast was, but it seems like you're kind of changing things up a little bit, so I want to get it out of your words and your mouth instead of mine. But like, what is, in a nutshell, what is IgniteCast?
Can we just keep talking about hockey?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, screw my company. Let's talk. Yeah.
It's not as important. No, no. Seriously, I mean, you guys were talking about hockey and rats with brains. I mean, what else could we talk about?
Right.
So, but no, IgniteCast is a tool that I've had the invention for probably around 2005. And it's just a way of being able to really easily capture knowledge and without, you know, if you're a subject matter expert and say you are an expert in welding or hair cutting or whatever, you can basically stitch together dissimilar pieces of media and be able to share it out to be able to teach people your knowledge.
Because you were saying for off the get-go, like most of that stuff leaves with the people as they leave the companies.
Yeah, one of the biggest problems right now in the industry is that when people retire, their knowledge just walks out the door with them. And there's no way that that these companies are actually capturing them. You'll have the training department that will actually create, you know, training courses. But, you know, it costs a lot of money to maintain them and not actually make them. And you're kind of funneling everything through a bottleneck.
And trainers aren't talking to the field, let's be honest.
No, they're trainers. And
right.
They're going to do whatever content passes their desk. And once it's gone, it's gone. But if there was tools available where an average subject matter expert that's an electrician or robot welder or whatever has the ability to be able to capture that knowledge, turn it into videos or slideshows or screenshots, and then be able to share it out very, very quickly, then a lot more people within a corporation would actually use that.
So walk me through that process, or should I say process, you know, for the Canadian.
Process.
Very right. Canadian. Good job.
But walk me through the process of – you know, do you got to walk around with a notebook?
No.
You got to walk around with a cell phone and take selfies?
So it's all digital, of course. Yeah, and the nice thing about now is because basically we're walking around with a knowledge capture device right in our hand. That's what a smartphone is. So it has the ability to be able to take video, to be able to take photos, to be able to stitch them together, be able to send them and package them up. And as a matter of fact, when we first developed the software, we didn't really have the bandwidth. The internet wasn't the same as what it is now,
sure.
Right? And so a lot of this stuff had to be compiled and created within a desktop computer. Well, now that can be done on a mobile base.
Well, that became another step.
Correct.
Where now, yes, things in your pocket.
Yep. And one of the connections.
Well, how do they know? I guess answer me that question. How do they know when to capture something?
At the same way that you know to capture something, if you're walking down the street and something interests you, what is knowledge? It's information, right?
But let's say I'm a plumber. Mm-hmm. I've been changing kitchen sinks for 20 years. To me, that's just what I do. It's not knowledge.
So,
but to someone else, it might be the Holy Grail.
But to your apprentice, and imagine if you had a bunch of different apprentices,
yeah.
And instead of having to show them on the field, they can be learning the night before they even go to the project. You can create that information right now within 5 or 10 minutes.
I'll give you another example on the plumber. Say you are looking for how to fix a dryer. What do people do these days? They go and they search YouTube. They're looking for little videos on how to do it. Those are really
how to make chili.
What we're calling ignitables, which basically was what our software does when it stitches together these pieces of media is creating these ignitables or learning nuggets that people can actually search and find, you know, and do things. So,
so what's the experience look like for the user consuming?
Well, you're using your digital your camera. You can actually use the screenshots, kind of like have you used Camtasia before?
No.
Okay, so that's like a screen recorder. So you can if you can actually train software step by step, you can use your camera, you can use video, and then once it compiles all of those media content inside of one system, You just hit a button and it stitches them all together, and you hit a button and you're sharing them out on the cloud, whether that's YouTube or whether it's IgniteCast, which is kind of our tracking system, which tracks that, and which you can wrap with courses and or I should say quizzes and stuff like that.
So I guess my question, and this kind of feeds into the, you know, the guy that's been doing it for 20 years, do you get, or is there any pushback coming from that generation? Just because, and I look at it from two perspectives. One, just the whole technology thing in general. But I my father-in-law. You know, he's like, you know, he knew, he decided it was time to get out of Chrysler when they wanted to basically to start logging everything in the computer and doing all that kind of stuff. Cause he was like, well, then what do you need me for? You know, it's, you know, it's, you know, okay. The reason why you pay me so much is because I have all this knowledge. And if I give you, if I put it in the computer and the kid that's just starting gets all this knowledge, why am I here? Why?
Well, that's one of the biggest problems with the company. They mean, all these people do have tribal knowledge, and I don't think you should wait till the very end to for them to retire to say, "Hey, it's time to start."
Hey, while you're here,
before you walk out,
right
we
here,
can't get
while
it.
We're here at your retirement party, why don't you go ahead and spend the next 6 hours?
We're just following.
Nobody gets a watch anymore; they get a laptop and then an order of IgniteCast.
Right,
on it.
Right.
They're good to go.
So, no, I think it has to be a process that you actually do right from the very beginning. And I did a small stint just recently back in the auto industry, and I cannot believe all the talent that's walked out compared to what 15
years. Oh, it's huge there.
It's crazy. Yeah. I mean, people that are working in tool and die shops right now, they don't have a clue about what they're doing. People that are working on the floor with high, you know, machinery and presses and stuff like that, they don't have a clue about what they're doing. I mean, it just blows me away. And it's in many cases, it's actually pretty scary.
So what's the use case out of this? Is it basically like, hey, we're going to take your field people and have them a little bit at a time kind of give up their, you know, intellectual property versus having someone like a trainer sit down for a week and develop curriculum?
Well, first off, it's not their intellectual property. It's, if it's a company, it's the company's intellectual property, because they've been obviously been trained to do that specific job.
Sure.
So a part of
and
their
job.
Right, and they're paid to do it. So they should be able to record it, not just for training someone else, because we all don't – I mean, I'm getting older. I don't have a great memory. I don't even remember some of the things I did yesterday, right? So documenting things myself, my own knowledge, so that I can refer back to it and look at videos is obviously extremely important just for myself.
That's especially, how it started, actually.
It did. Yeah, I was actually programming robots.
Was it the 98 cup, the 02 cup, the 08?
I don't know. Yeah.
That turns out it was 08.
Well, you know, I grew up in Canada, so that might explain a lot. So anyways. but no, it's – I think it's important for really everyone to start capturing their knowledge just for their own purposes. So,
and it's beyond that too. I mean, you think about your job, Bob, all the forms that salespeople have to fill out and go through the information time after time, being able to capture that and train people on it quick, fast, and in a hurry.
Well, and that's one of the things where, at least like with consulting, with sales, there's a few jobs, professions that it's difficult to train because everybody has their own way of doing it. Mm-hmm. I mean, is this
– you've talked about wanting to teach a class in sales though.
Because it needs to be done at the university level, because I think it's being taught poorly. Right. I think
– And it's barely available at this point.
It is barely. It is barely. There was a certificate –
You could go get Sandler though.
Yeah, whatever. There was a certificate from University of Wisconsin.
He would, but he's so busy, you should be working for him.
But what – I guess what verticals is this the best, most applicable for?
Well, where it's being currently used right now is an automotive. So anything like this technical that has like a human-machine interface, like robotic programming or whatever, and you want to capture that on, you know, for the second shift to come in and say, hey, this is how you program this, or this is how the welder did, or this is how the welder went down. Like you can – if you can make –
This is the stupid widget that always breaks.
Exactly.
When somebody calls and says, this machine is down, look here first.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So it's not just training on.
So instead of handing them like a manual, you're giving them a 3-minute YouTube video.
A YouTube video. It's on IgniteCast, but in essence.
Or sorry. Yeah. I
mean, yes. It's.
Could be a series of photos, could be a text, could be whatever. But yeah.
So I mean, I'd rather. You give me a book like, you know, like Ken's book, say, learn this thing. Oh, come on, man. You know,
Bob's not an RTFM kind of guy. He's not.
No, right. Well, there's a bunch of pages right there. I don't know if you saw that.
There's pictures in the book, though, Bob.
Oh, yay.
Okay. It's going to be okay.
Yay.
Save. Send them to Facebook in case someone's going to leak them out later.
Right.
But I think it's just not been quick enough. I mean, the tools were not fast enough for the average person, the average subject matter expert that understands it, to be able to capture that content and be able to send a link to the next shift or the next person, or even across the, you know, across the globe to someone on the other side of the planet and say, look, this is how we do it over here.
I mean, you got to make it part of, I guess, do you have to make it part of the job description? Like, hey, part of our job Correct. Description is to capture everything you do.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
Makes sense. Well, and I'm just trying to think. I mean, you know, you could see that kind of with, you know, dealing with coding teams in different areas. Hey, mm-hmm. let me walk you through our architecture. Let me walk you through our frameworks. Let me walk you through this instead of, you know, how much do we all hate WebExes?
Well, what I'm thinking is how much user kickback do you get from like the know-it-alls that like, no, I'm not telling anybody. This is my, you know, like.
You do get kickback.
Like I was going to say that's got to be pretty prevalent.
Yeah, and those are the people you should be looking at because that's the problem. I mean, look at the way that the internet is today. It's about sharing knowledge, right? And that's about the whole social media. It's community. It's sharing. And I think that that kind of mentality is actually changing and it needs to change. If we're going to grow as a, you know, as a culture, we have to start sharing a lot more about what we do. And I think the more you share, I mean, most people that are very successful know this, the more you share, the more success comes your way.
You think about the idea to mentor people, right? And this is a really good tool to be able to do that. I think business coaches is a really big opportunity for us because they're sitting around training, showing people how to do things. Even just social media training is quick and down and dirty as it can be. Yep. We could have created 3 or 4 different trainings while we were sitting here listening to Ken earlier. They wouldn't have been as good as Ken. Don't get me wrong. But they would have been solid, you know. And it's that quick. It's that right now. And it's that ability to actually put something out that has meaning, that adds value to people's lives. And I think we've shifted from that. I'm going to hold all my information and I'm not going to show you anything.
Well, it's 80s IT versus IT today.
Right. Correct. Open source.
Yeah.
It's a Saturday Night Live, like your company's IT guy.
Right? Yeah.
You know, like, you know just, yeah, exactly, exactly.
Well, no, it's true. I mean, dude, I mean, you know, back in the 80s, we all know. I mean, we were wizards in cloaks and we walked out of the back room in a cloud of smoke, literally.
With Mountain Dew.
Or Jolt Cola back in those days, you know, and, you know, basically, you know, don't ask us how things happen, just, you know, STFU, and this is how it works, and just stay out of our way.
I know Cisco CLI.
I know something I won't tell. you know, and now, you know, you've got all, you know, and then you've got kind of the worst case scenario of that where, oh, well, my 11-year-old can build a website. Okay, yeah, go ahead, let him. Let me know how that works out for
probably
you.
In a couple weeks.
But I mean, it is. I mean, the tools and the access and stuff, you know, the information is out there. You might as well have it available with that in-house flavor, with that in-house touch, because I mean that's how it's the most important. You know, it is. I mean, I'll never forget Terrence, a guy I worked with at GM, who like literally every at least once a meeting, the phrase, you know, God forbid I get hit by a beer truck. Right. Would come out of his mouth. I was like, dude, like, couldn't it be you win the lottery and disappear? He's like, nope. If I win the lottery, they'd still find me. But if I get hit by a beer truck.
You know, I could see it just thinking of use cases.
Kind of wishful
thinking. Like for a restaurant industry, mm-hmm. Like, franchises. Hey, here's, yeah, not just franchises, but just anybody. Like, here's how I made this thing.
Yeah, true.
Instead of like putting the picture up on your poster. You know, this is how we do. This is how we make this.
We gave licenses of Ignite to the Orion Township School District, and they had kids doing recipes for all kinds of different mm-hmm. things. You know, writing in the baking class and stuff like that, and then putting Igniteables up on IgniteCast. It was pretty impressive. My daughter, she made one for English gravy. She made another one for Yorkshire pudding because we have kind of an English background. So yeah, it's. It could be used for
need
a
one for Jason Brown's kid from Security Jabber that brought in the
zucchini bread.
Oh my God. That's a 10-year-old kid made that. It's like his business.
Good for him.
Seriously. I want more.
So I guess where are you – like what's next? Where are you looking for customers primarily? Who should be looking at this that isn't yet?
We're looking in the healthcare sector. Blue Cross Blue Shield do have a lot of licenses. They use it for like filling out forms and stuff like that.
I say, do you need to be HIPAA – like this isn't for patients. You need to be HIPAA compliant.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
Mostly internal, but it could be external.
Yeah,
but
it's
not without that.
Right.
Aerospace and military is one areas that we're moving into. It's been used for doing pilot training because it's very, very process oriented, like step by step.
Right.
Step, it works very good for teaching, for training pilots. And it's been used by a lot of different companies on the West Coast for that. Obviously, automotive. As you said, restaurants. I mean, it's really right across the board.
So this is, you know, you mentioned, you know, upload video, upload this, upload that. So, mm-hmm. you know, you mentioned like aerospace and some of the other stuff. Do people tweak about uploading it to where? Like, I mean, is this something that is only a cloud-based app? Is it something that can be local within a company?
Yeah, it's both. We actually have a public site at ignitecast.com. And from that site, you download a desktop publisher.
Okay.
That you can tie to your mobile device through Dropbox.
Okay.
And through there, you can actually, you know, take screenshots or videos from your phone and actually make Ignitables, or you can take them directly off of your computer itself.
Okay.
And then you upload those to Ignitecast or YouTube as well. Both of them are in there. The other way we do it, the larger accounts, is we actually white label the site completely and we'll give it their name, their branding.
Gotcha.
We do a VPN connection, which can be either Active Directory or through Okta.
Okay.
And so it's 256 encryption and to make sure it's secure. And so, so there's multiple different ways.
If my company already has its own LMS, learning management system, are your courses portable?
They are SCORM compliant from the player. I think, which is fine, but there's also other ways of putting them on Ignitecast and linking them through XML over inside of an LMS as well, instead of hosting them over there. And then you get proper tracking because I believe our tracking is more seamless just because it's integrated with our player.
And so, Dave just asked, one of the things what's coming next is we're working on the idea of being that backwards compatible, right? So you correct. Could take all your courseware and put it into Ignitecast at some point.
Gotcha.
So that's one of the goals moving forward.
Yeah. My fear is not to try and become another LMS. I like the sweet spot that we are in with the knowledge capture and keeping things simple, the same as what Twitter did with 140 characters. You know, it's like let's maintain something that's manageable and easy to understand. And easy.
Well, except they just screwed that up.
I was going to say, is that less simple now that it's 280? I'm not sure.
Was it the Lansing police that posted, hey, we have 280 characters now. We can say everything we really wanted to. Speeding is bad. Right.
Well, Trump will only have to do 2 tweets now instead of 4.
Right.
That was the whole goal.
Oh, very cool. So where do we find out more?
The website is ignitecast.com.
Okay.
So it's that simple. You can contact us directly through there. And there's an actual contact form and phone number. Our developers are located in Battle Creek.
Good to know.
Yep. So we are Michigan based. There was nothing outsourced to anywhere other part of the world for this application.
Love to hear that.
It's a Python.
They work for Serial, I heard.
Yeah. And one of the developers that's working on it now is one of the guys that actually invented Joomla. If you're familiar with what Joomla is,
okay,
I remember what it. Well, I totally remember the name. I still
it's
remember
a CMS. It's yeah. Second rated CMS to WordPress. I think is a better CMS. Be quite honest,
but. Joomla was always the geek's WordPress,
right?
Like exactly. if you knew the ins and outs of it, that was your shit.
Yeah,
you know. But it, you know, it's like Android versus iPhone.
Yeah, I was just gonna make that analogy, and I'm not the geek.
Well, yeah,
I'll give a shout out to him too. His name is Stephen Pignatero.
Yeah. Okay,
very 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 bright guy. As a matter of fact, they're two identical twins, is Michael and Stephen. Michael is more on the operations and the sales side. And Steven's definitely the geek and programmer, but just a couple of great guys, and it's been a good relationship partnering with them.
So, very cool. Yeah.
I have a sneaking suspicion they may be on your show soon.
Sounds like they might want. They should be.
They should be. Yeah, they're an interesting. Don't ask them to do magic tricks for you.
No, just to talk the history of Joomla, that'd be cool. Yeah,
that would be
seriously
fun.
All
right, well, cool,
gentlemen. Appreciate the time you spent. Thank you for being patient.
Oh no, it's awesome.
Terry, always a pleasure.
Good to see you, buddy.
Absolutely. So Ignitecast, find them online. And then, hey, we'd like to wrap things up here. This episode 222 of the IT and the D Show. We'd like to thank App River for keeping the lights on. Thank you for the support.
Once again, App River.
On behalf of Bob, Dave, and Randy, do us a favor. Drink up your drinks. Get your phone numbers. You don't got to go home. You just got to get the hell out of here. See you next week. Drive careful. Beat it.
The emergency destruct system is now activated.
Conan! What is best in life? To crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and to hear the lamentation of their women.
Long live Flash! You've saved your life. Have a nice day.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass.
and I'm all out of bubble gum.
Nice shooting, son. What's your name?
Murphy.
Make the run.
Game over, man. It's game over.
It's over, Johnny. It's over.
Nothing is over. Nothing. You just don't turn it off.
I can't say no, and I don't really want to, so.
Well, especially with the back doors open.
Yo! Hold up! Time out! Time out! Y'all take a chill. You need to cool that shit out. And that's the double truth, Ruth.
Bob loves it in the can.
I hope this was as much fun for you as it was for me.
That's why I like it in the can.
Joe, on the cheese.
Fear me.
My job is to make sure this program is morally upright and cultural and wholesome.
Shut up, Mimsy! Shut up, Mimsy! Shut up, Mimsy!
Why would, like, Buick put their cars next to, like, the Bentleys? Like, why? That's not marketing.
The alphabet.
It's brilliant.
Yeah, I can't take that position.
That analogy sucks because it's right.
Because you're getting your 8-track tuned up.
Are we at a break yet? Yeah, so now I'm just, like, doing, like, stupid stuff to make me laugh.
Venture capital is not the end game.
When are we going to talk about me?
Jane, you ignorant slut.
It's my show. I can say what I want. Yeah.
Kiss my ass. Go home. Unplug. Get off the goddamn internet. You are everything that is wrong with the internet right now.
You're so white right now.
I'm the whitest guy in the room. Just explain it to me.
Show now.
I love this city. I was banging on the wang.
Really? Should we talk about this? Tag team. Should I keep going or should I stop?
Can I just say, it's been great being on a show that talks about Mickey Rooney dying for 20 seconds and then poop for 10 minutes.